Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of Wind Talks podcast from the campus of IIT Madras. Today, we have with us Professor Satya Chakravarti, a stalwart in the field of futuristic avionics. Before we dive deep into a conversation with him, let's have a brief intro. Professor Satya Chakravarti is a distinguished aerospace engineer and an ardent advocate for deep tech entrepreneurship based at the Indian Institute of Technology, IIT Madras, where he serves as the head of the National Center for Combustion Research and Development, NCCRD, and as a professor in the Aerospace Engineering Department. With a vision to democratize technology and promote sustainable development, he is the visionary founder and CEO of the ePlane company, which aims to create India's first flying electric taxi. His journey into the realm of aviation innovation began in 2019 when he taught the world's inaugural course on electric aircrafts, further integrating educational advancements with industry objectives during the ePlane company's incubation at IIT Madras. Professor Chakravarti's leadership at NCCRD, one of the global frontiers in combustion research, underscores his commitment to cutting-edge technological development supported by significant government and industrial funding. His academic credentials are impressive, with a Bachelor's of Technology from IIT Madras and both a Master's of Science and PhD from Georgia Institute of Technology. Since joining IIT Madras in 1997, he has rapidly advanced through the academic ranks, culminating in his appointment as a professor in 2009. A prolific researcher, he has authored over 80 peer-reviewed publications and delivered more than 200 conference papers, sharing his insights on propulsion and combustion across prestigious institutions and conferences. He has been awarded the HAL Prize for the Best Undergraduate in Aerospace Engineering in 1991, the Young Engineer Award by the Indian National Academy of Engineering in 2003, the Young Faculty Recognition Award by IIT Madras in 2009, the Dalmia Hemsi Award by the High Energy Materials Society of India in 2009, the DRDO Academic Excellence Award by the Defence Research and Development Organization twice in 2009 and 2016, and the Deep Tech Enabler Award for TAI Chennai in 2022. As a two-time TEDx speaker and co-founder of transformative startups like Agnikul Cosmos, Aerostrovelis Energy, Avishkar Hyperloop, and GalaxEye, Professor Chakravarti is not only redefining the aerospace landscape in India, but also inspiring the next generation of innovators. Welcome to Wind Talks, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we dive into certain very serious topics, I just thought let's talk to you about how your journey started from IIT Madras to all the way being an entrepreneur today of multiple startups and in a very, I would say, a futuristic space that, you know, all these startups are evolving around. So can you just take us through the journey?
Yeah, I think the initial part of the journey was fairly straightforward up until perhaps when I was a full professor, okay, which is to go through my BTech in aerospace engineering at IIT Madras, mm-hmm, then went to Georgia Tech for my master's and PhD, and then did a postdoc for a couple of years, mm-hmm, then came over here to join the faculty here, then went through my career progression from assistant professor to associate professor to full professor. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the 1990s and the 2010s, sorry, 2000s. And then stepping into the 2010s is when, mm-hmm, we had an opportunity to establish the National Center for Combustion R&D, mm-hmm, where we established very large facilities that are of industrial standards, mm-hmm, for combustion in automotive, aerospace, and thermal power, fire research kinds of sectors.
Okay.
And that kind of was the motivation for us to actually get into startups. because we thought that if you were doing some very detailed engineering to establish these very large setups like a microgravity drop tower or a supersonic combustion rig or a high pressure spray rig or any of those things, we thought that we could actually get into even product development. But then entrepreneurship is just more than technology and product development. It's about the market fit and all those things. So we have to then think about like why you're doing what you're doing, who cares about it, what's the value of what you're trying to do, and who will care to invest in it, and what will be the gestation period for such investment, what's the kind of appetite that's there, all of that stuff. So and then one founder or the other started coming up and said, let's actually found these startups to do engines, rockets, and so on. And and alongside, I said, I felt that if people half my age were actually daring to make engines and rockets, you know, making an electric plane at this age should not be too
far-fetched.
So I then jumped onto e-plane myself.
So you spoke about a lot of startups that you know you are a part of. Can you quickly take us through each of these startups and what they are into? And probably on like a layman term, if I have a look at this, like how would I understand what these startups are doing?
Yeah, I think the earliest of the startups that came up were Aeros Truvelos and Agnikul. Around the time when I was actually ideating e-plane myself, and then one of my colleagues, Professor Vinu, and I then conceptualized Extrafuels. And also around the same time, which is all in the 2017-2018 time frame, is also when I became the faculty advisor to the Avishkar Hyperloop student team. And that led to some of these students leaving the Avishkar stable and then going on to co-found Galaxy along with me. And subsequently, Avishkar Hyperloop actually led to Twitter Hyperloop. And yeah, these are the ones that I've actually been a co-founder of, although primarily in an advising capacity. And e-plane is what I have been spending my time full time.
It's your
working
baby.
On it, right? And then, of course, subsequently, we also actually have other startups that I have been an advisor of, like Nutrace or Aerodome, Neurostellar, all of that stuff. So it's now more close to about some 9 startups that that have been part of this center.
Amazing. So you spoke about two startups, and I want to talk to you about these two startups. One is e-plane and the other one being Hyperloop. Both of these, when you look at it for a layman like us, it's quite futuristic. We don't see anything that, you know, like I can envision that something like this could probably happen. So where do you think we stand with these startups at the moment? And what do you think the future holds?
So Bill Gates is actually credited with this, saying that people overestimate what can happen in 2 years and underestimate what can happen in 10 years.
Okay.
And then there are also these kinds of sayings that say people become overnight success after 10 years of toil. Right. So I'm kind of like this 10-year marathon guy. Right. So for me, if something is actually doable and possible in 10 years, it's not futuristic. Right.
Okay.
So it's that means it's actually the here and now thing.
Okay.
Right. What's futuristic is beyond the 10-year period.
Okay.
Right. So
learning.
Yeah. So if you don't, the point being, if we conceptualize something today, it's not the future anymore.
Okay.
So it's the present.
Present. Okay.
Right. So it's in our minds.
Yes.
Right. Futuristic is something that we can't even conceptualize.
Okay.
That's what is future.
Makes sense. Yeah. That's a good perspective to something.
So, But you know, not everybody agrees and accepts what I'm trying to say, because people have to actually fork out cash and put money on the table for me to actually build on. And they are like 10 years. But there are people. So like there is patient capital and so on. The point essentially that we have to ask is, okay, if somebody is actually going to be able to put money on the table for a 10-year project, develop a product, what's the kind of value are you creating? Right? Is it something that's valuable enough for us to work for? And the value is actually in pure dollar terms, right? Nothing very fancy saying that, oh, it's like great knowledge and all of that stuff, right? What's the kind of value you're going to create in terms of dollar terms? What's the market cap, market share, what's the market potential that it has, how many people are going to use this, what's the kind of money they're going to spend on it, right? And does it have a global reach, right? Do we have like a global market that we are after, or are we just copy pasting something else that has happened somewhere else?
Yeah,
these are all the questions that for me are more important than what might be, you know, daunting, like about a 10-year thing,
yeah,
right? So from that perspective, I think e-plane is not at all futuristic.
Okay.
Right? It's extremely doable. And we just had to go through the process.
Okay.
And so, of course, in people in different parts of the world are actually correctly focusing on the plane. But there's also the ecosystem that needs to be built.
Built, yeah.
For the vertiports and the charging infrastructure and the air traffic management, the pilot training, and all of that stuff. So I think we are getting to a point where that inflection point is happening.
Okay.
So the plane building is reaching a mature stage where we are putting our plane through the certification process, and the certification regulations are also becoming mature.
Okay.
Right. And then we are now having a focus on the ecosystem. Who are going to be the users? Where will this plane land? Who will it take? Okay. And what's the kind of money would they be willing to pay? Is it affordable for that clientele? And then how can I actually disrupt the market further? All of these things are actually happening on ePlane.
Oh, wow.
So ePlane is something that we expect will actually be a 2 to 3 year horizon.
Oh, wow.
Right? Okay. And in that sense, Bill Gates may be right. We may be over predicting what's happening in 2 years.
It's absolutely
right? But it's in between 2 years and 10 years. Well, closer to the 2 year mark when compared to the 10 year mark.
Okay.
Hyperloop, on the other hand, could actually be more closer to the 10 year mark. But still, I would like to believe that it is actually within the 10 year mark.
Okay.
The reason being, if we actually were to start today,
mm-hmm.
we already done the first phase of what I had actually dreamt of. Right. So we had a 3-phase process. Right. Okay. So the first phase is to have a subscale tube, which will be about 0.5 kilometer,
okay.
and a subscale pod that runs in vacuum inside that with levitation and all that stuff.
Okay.
Right, we are very, very close to actually reaching that goal.
Okay.
Right, and that's happening in the new campus of IIT Madras.
Mm-hmm.
And we have now done multiple parts of it. Like we have demonstrated levitation outside the tube. We have done a pod run inside the tube without levitation. We have held vacuum in the tube.
Mm-hmm.
Without running the pod,
oh,
and all these kinds of different combinations.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have to pack all of that stuff together in one time and get this to happen. And that's my first phase.
Okay.
Right. The second phase is now go do the real thing, the full thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Maybe 5 kilometers or 10 kilometers kind of distances with bends, with turns,
okay.
right, with curves, with branches of lanes, you know, all of those complexities added.
Mm-hmm.
Progressively increase the speeds from, let's say, 200 kilometer per hour with just linear propulsion, then go to levitation, go up to about 400 kilometer per hour, and then run in vacuum and show that you can do very cost effectively at about 600 kilometer per hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we, and then do this with lots of safety, figured out and standards developed and all that, then we are actually ready. So that may be about a 3 to 5 year period.
Okay.
And then we are ready for actually taking people, right? A Chennai, Bangalore, Mysore
yeah.
kind of corridor, may take another 5 years for us to actually lay the
entire
tube and all that stuff. So that's probably about 5 years, 10 years.
10 years from now.
Right?
Okay.
Well, so yeah, it's all doable.
So the entire project that we're looking at, it's not just one phase, but it's all going to be there by, say, 10 years is what
yeah.
you're trying to say.
Yeah. So if we keep our focus on it
focus
and then keep
it.
Going at it, you know, phase after phase after phase, we can actually get that.
So clearly it's not futuristic,
yeah, yeah.
but it's in the present.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that we've spoken about the two startups that are not in the futuristic space, but are already there and in place, and we would see it in, say, 2 to 10 years from
right.
now, how does a typical concept of to a product, like say something that goes into a mass manufacturing post, you know, how does that entire process generally take place? You can do it for either one. You've explained Hyperloop. I think we've understood that. So probably with ePlane, like how did the whole thought process of, oh, this is the concept and this is what we want to reach. And, you know, this what was on paper is now a reality. How did that process go?
Yeah, so there are two starting points, and I'll tell you which one is the wrong one.
Okay.
Right. So it all starts with trying to solve a problem.
Ah.
right? And you have to ask yourself, what's the problem you're trying to solve?
Okay.
Then the next question is, what's the solution?
Mm-hmm.
The solution doesn't necessarily have to be a technological solution. Okay. It could be a business innovation, for example. In this problem that you are actually looking at, what exactly is the pain point?
Mm-hmm.
Is that pain point, does it require some new technology to be developed?
Mm-hmm.
Can you actually apply an existing technology innovatively,
mm-hmm.
To develop a product?
Okay.
Or do you necessarily have to develop a product in the first place, or can you actually develop business solutions too? Okay. Right? So the wrong thing to do is to actually start with the technology.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So many times when we're looking at people that are coming out of engineering colleges or professors and so on, so they are good at some technology, they are essentially like carrying a hammer looking for every solution to look like a nail.
Okay.
Right? That's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So in my case, for example, I did realize that the world is moving away from combustion,
mm-hmm.
Sitting in the combustion center that we are.
Yeah.
I felt that as an aerospace engineer, my position was actually fairly secure.
Okay.
That we didn't expect planes and rockets to actually become electric
yeah.
or any other thing,
yeah.
Away from combustion until I retire. Right. So my question is, okay, if I'm actually going to retire in 2034,
uh-huh.
Right? That was like, so I'm looking at when this happened in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So I had about 16 to 17, 18 years,
mm-hmm.
Right? So will planes stop, burning fuel? Will rockets stop burning fuel in this next 18 years? The answer didn't look like it would.
Would.
Right. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I'm safe. I can actually be, I can do what I'm doing and fade into oblivion.
Yes.
Right. So, or can I actually challenge the status quo,
mm-hmm.
Right? I can jump on the electric bandwagon,
yeah.
Right? And do something before fading into oblivion. So the fading into oblivion part is there.
Is there, for sure. Yeah, okay.
For everybody,
yeah.
Right? But the question is like, for our satisfaction, what have we done to tide against that?
Yeah, true.
So now the problem essentially is that this is a technology-oriented, thought process. That,
yeah.
Can I actually make electric planes? So okay. That's when the question arises, who cares, right? Who really cares, right? Am I actually creating like a monument that can sit in a museum,
mm-hmm.
Right? Or is it actually a product that will solve somebody's problem?
True.
And that's where an electric plane does not solve people's problems to begin with,
okay?
Because the range that you get out of an electric plane is like so short.
Okay.
With the existing and conventional batteries.
Yeah, true.
Maybe about 200 kilometers, 300 kilometers.
Yeah.
Right. You hardly find airports and runways that are within that kind of distance. Nobody really wants to go to an airport and take a plane and then, get off the other side and then again go back to their homes or wherever they want to go,
yeah.
In a three-legged journey, mm-hmm. For such a short distance anyway.
Yeah, true.
Right. So they would rather actually get into a car or whatever it is and then, yeah. Directly go,
yeah.
Over there. And then there are highways and there are, fast trains and all that stuff. So that's not the problem. I mean, there's no problem to solve out there, right? So you can make an electric plane, but nobody would care.
Yeah.
So the question then is, okay, fine. I don't have to actually depend on airports anymore, mm-hmm. Right? I should actually take off and land vertically.
Okay.
And this should be done with like very tight spaces,
yeah.
So that we can land and take off from anywhere and so on.
Okay.
That now takes the technology to the people.
Okay.
Right? Instead of getting the people
to the technology. Yeah.
To the technology. It's very important.
Yeah.
Right? So disrupting technology is all about democratizing its access,
mm-hmm.
And getting the technology to your doorstep.
Right? Yeah.
That's what the direction of evolution,
mm-hmm.
Is all about. So that's where I think I had this thought about like a infrastructure and all that stuff. But, mm-hmm. These things were afterthoughts. It's more about just focusing on what's the problem you're trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually a bingo moment because, yeah, I mean, there is a huge traffic problem in our roads.
Absolutely.
Right? And even starting from, people who are actually in ambulances.
Yeah.
Right? And then, so we have to solve that problem.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the starting point. Then you have a very tight use case. And you can actually put a dollar value to this and say that so many people are actually getting stuck in traffic, so much cargo is getting stuck in traffic, so many ambulances are getting stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
Or forget about traffic, but like, let's say, going to far off places, hilly regions, there is tourism, right? There's pilgrims centers. So typically in India, like most hills actually have some god up there. Right? Everybody wants to go there, at least once in their lives.
Certainly.
And then so there's like so many people there, right? So they are willing to pay so much money. So there's a value to it.
Yeah.
So then you actually develop a use case. Then you start thinking about, okay, what's the technology stack that needs to be built? What's the money that it takes? And if I have to actually take this money, what's the payback? Right. And so if there is a value, there is so much value there that, that can be tapped and so much investment that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Right. Over what time can I actually get this to bridge this gap between the investment and the return on
return
the
investment? Yeah.
So this is the way we have to actually sort of configure an entire startup. Yeah.
This actually solves the large problem that we have currently in this country where, you know, like you rightly said, there is a thought process that this is what I want to do, but there is no thought about where can this be applied or where is it helping.
So the way I look at it is, don't ask the question, what can I do?
Yeah.
Ask the question, what I need to do.
What I need to do.
So, I mean, and then don't get, you know, don't put like a fence around you saying that I'm a combustion person, I'm a... whatever it is, right? So whatever is your training, right? I mean, nobody really cared about what your training was.
Yeah, no one does. Yeah.
And nobody was born with a training anyway.
Yes.
Right? So if after about 50 years of age, right, I could actually switch from having done combustion for 30 plus years and then say, let me do electric.
Electric.
Right?
Yeah.
You start from scratch. I mean, you're on the street, right? You're in the classroom, right? You're going back to your books. And all of that stuff. Yeah. So be ready to learn all the time. Nobody really cares what you know.
Yeah.
Right. People actually ask the question, what do you do with it? And why are you doing, you know, that for? And for whom are you doing this?
You're in quite the contradictory, you know, fields, I must say, like starting in combustion and, you know, getting into electric. It's completely different. No one would have in their right mind thought that, okay, this person who is in this field, like, would jump into...
That's actually where the startup idea is actually a good idea. So
if,
for example, with the combustion background, I were to actually go and apply for a job somewhere, right, in an electric plane company, they will not take me.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
Okay, so but instead I actually say I want to start up
an
electric plane company.
Yeah.
Nobody questions?
Yeah, no one would question, yes.
Right, so.
But then it would be a good story to understand, you know, like now that we know that you had a thought process that, you know, what would be the future back then.
Correct.
And, you know, sticking on.
So fortunately for me, there weren't any electric plane companies in the first place. And there weren't, the electric plane technology was not figured out at all. So it had to actually be put together.
It's a good
point. So I had some pedigree of putting together like a large center with lots of technology packed in it and all that stuff. So that worked in my favor.
Yeah. So you were talking about regulations. So how favorable has the regulatory system within, per se, India worked out with, you know, an electric taxi that is going to be in the system ecosystem? So how has it played out for you?
Regulations actually kind of wake up to a new technology after some time, right? When it becomes palpable.
Okay.
Right. So you look at, I think the best example of regulations going hand in hand with technology is the UPI. Okay. So that place is hugely regulated.
Yes.
Right. So RBI regulations are actually extremely stringent. They are very, very careful that nobody's money should be cheated on and stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Of course, it doesn't look like a lot of rocket science kind of technology.
Yeah.
But still, every I has to be dotted and every T has to be crossed.
Yes.
Should be completely robust and then all that stuff. Right. So there is a lot of technology that's packed behind it.
Yeah.
But the regulations actually have been, you know, going right after them and making sure that it's all perfect.
Perfect.
And that's exactly the same in this case too, right? So the regulators initially would be skeptical when somebody says they want to actually do an air taxi. This is actually true anywhere in the world, right? It's not very specific to India.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, they say, hey, wait a minute. Looks like somebody's doing something. Right? And then it looks credible. And then they come and visit us. And then we actually do everything according to what's the norms of the industry. and so on. And then they start cooperating. And then we are now at a point where they are actually a little bit ahead of us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then they are kind of waiting for us to deliver.
Okay.
Okay. And then we get there, and then we will then say, hey, wait a minute, we have actually got a plane, you are certifying it, then what about the ecosystem? They are actually building the ecosystem.
Yeah.
They're looking at the regulations that build the ecosystem as well. So I believe that the regulations will actually be in place well in advance of when we know we want to operationalize this.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm very confident, very upbeat about it. Yeah.
Okay. So now that, you know, we have the regulations in place and you are on track moving towards, you know, the final goal of one day we will all say, probably not one day, in 2 years' time or 3 years' time, we would have something called as an electric taxi.
Correct.
And are you largely looking at it as something that would be, say, like you were saying, the problem of not only traffic, but something on the lines of, say, people, an ambulance or something else that is stuck? So is that what you're looking at for the company, or is there anything else that you're going to commercially look at?
Essentially, it's three things. One is ambulance, the other one is a taxi, the third one is cargo.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So all three are up for the cards.
Okay.
In fact, in October of 2023, we pivoted from just a pure taxi play to including an ambulance.
Ambulance service.
And that essentially meant that I had to expand my the footprint of my aircraft.
Yeah.
Previously, I was just doing like a pilot plus one passenger.
Yeah.
Then it became a bit more realistic if you could have a pilot plus a patient and a paramedic.
Yeah.
That means that the aircraft could actually take a pilot plus two passengers in their taxi avatar. And then we decided that we will actually have space for going all the way up to about five passengers, like typically like a car, pilot plus four passengers.
Oh, okay.
But we have the capability, but we have to test the market on what really works.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense to actually have lots of empty seats, because most taxi rides are single passenger rides.
Yes.
And that conviction still holds, that we shouldn't actually have passengers waiting for other seats to get filled up. Seats. The purpose of flying would be lost.
Yeah, sure.
Or if you have multiple seats and they have to actually fork out for all of those other seats as well, that's not going to be economical either.
Yeah.
So a very compact footprint plane with just the right number of seats is still actually a part of our market hypothesis that's been validated by primary research.
Okay.
But we now have the ability to kind of scale forward or backward.
With
the aircraft that we are making.
Okay.
Yeah. So we then decided it makes more sense for us to actually make our first prototype itself that is lending itself to multiple variants instead of just boxing ourselves with just one product. Yeah.
Okay. I want to shift topics a little bit and talk to you about NCCRD.
Okay.
I want to understand that how can, say, a research institution and an industry plug into, say, a research institution? And why is it important that, you know, this synergy happens? So can you just take us through, because you head the entire ecosystem.
Correct. So, no, I think as I was going through my career progression in the 2000s, as I was saying, right, it was very evident that all of our the research that we do is actually meant for the industry.
Yes.
Right. And in fact, that logic actually extended all the way to saying all of the research that we do is good only if you were to develop products.
Yeah.
Right. So when you now say industry, it means that, the industry is developing the product and we support the industry from academia. Yeah. Right. The startups are all about, like, if they're particularly coming out of academia, the academia itself is actually involved in developing the products straight.
Yeah.
Right. But this is basically the ultimate goal of whatever R&D that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And fundamentally, we are an R&D institution.
Yeah.
Right. IIT Madras is an R&D institution. So when I was actually a student here, we used to be viewed as like an undergraduate teaching institution. Okay. Then it became like an undergraduate teaching institution that also did research.
Okay.
Right. And then it transformed to a research institution that also does undergraduate teaching.
Okay.
Right. And the hallmark of a good institution is that the R&D that's actually being done applied to the industry and new product development by the industry or the startups that they spawn themselves actually is brought to the classroom as examples.
Yes.
Okay, in whatever you do, you could be doing thermodynamics, you could be doing heat transfer,
mm-hmm.
right? Things that are actually so basic,
yeah,
that you don't necessarily have to give live examples.
Yes.
But live examples is what actually makes the classroom so much more interesting, right? And the kind of experience that we get out of engaging ourselves with the industry,
mm-hmm.
and developing products and startups,
yeah,
actually directly flows back into the classroom,
yeah,
to educate the next set of engineers that will flow into these organizations.
Yeah, true.
Right, so that symbiosis
has to.
Is actually super important,
yeah,
for us to preserve,
mm-hmm.
and that's what NCCRD is all about. So NCCRD is an out and out industry focused entity.
Perfect. Yeah. So the synergy exists and it is in place. Before we wrap up today's session and move forward, there's one question I generally ask everyone. So before we move into that question, I had like one important question for you. So what is it that, like you said, all these Hyperloop, E-plane are not futuristic in thought process. But if we look at India and the globe, where do we stand in terms of such futuristic is what we would say, but now that you've given me a good perspective of what is it that it holds for us when it comes to this entire segment, that what do you think that we will see, and we shouldn't think that this is out of a sci-fi, but this is actually something that is doable.
Yeah, so what we're doing here in these startups are actually pretty much neck and neck with what's happening in the rest of the world.
Okay.
Right. So that's a good thing about new technology, right? So when you're developing something new and the product is something that doesn't exist anywhere, the technology is not being implemented anywhere, commercialized anywhere, we have an opportunity to actually do this for the first time.
Yeah.
So one of the problems that we have in India is a sort of like a colonial hangover, in my view. Where we always basically think if the Westerners do this, then we can actually follow.
Yeah.
That day is gone.
Okay.
Right. That boat has sailed.
Okay.
Right. We now have to actually have this perspective that mm-hmm. if I actually develop something in India
mm-hmm.
at a very, very frugal level,
mm-hmm.
right, and position it in the market for fairly low cost.
Okay.
Right. For the final consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then what's good for India is actually good for the world.
World. Okay.
Right. So an American doesn't necessarily have to actually shell out like $10 where he can actually live with giving out $1.
Yeah.
Right. And $1 is what an Indian can afford.
Ford,
yeah. Right. Yeah. So the American can enjoy because I actually did it for Indian.
India. Yeah.
Okay. So it's very important for us to actually develop new technologies out of India that are competitive,
yeah,
at the global scale.
Yeah.
And we have an opportunity to disrupt the global market,
yes,
with this. Right. So the slogan now is what's good for India is good for the world.
What's good for India is good for the world. Thank you so much on all these insights. But before we wrap up on today's session, I wanted to ask you the one important thing that's per se the younger generation out there has to keep in mind, or say one mantra from your end that is really important for someone who's looking at establishing a startup and their entrepreneurial journey.
All of a sudden, you just made me feel old, didn't you?
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Right.
Well, it's never too late to start,
yeah,
is a okay. Good mantra.
Okay, so you said it.
That's the mantra. It.
Yeah, but then for the young person, actually, that doesn't apply, because why would they want to actually wait until it's too late?
Yeah,
right.
Why?
Yeah, so I think it depends, right? So, there are all kinds of young people. So, and they are... they are stepping out of college or, fancying about dropping out of college.
Yes.
and then they want to pursue higher studies, or they want to actually explore the job market, or they want to start up.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple options, right? And then, so, in fact, as you grow older, lots of these doors actually keep shutting,
okay,
right, at you. And then you don't have these options. When you're young, you have multiple options, right? So it's good looking from outside, but it actually could be extremely confusing for somebody who is very young.
Yeah.
But it's actually a good thing, right? It's a good problem to have when you have so many options. So the quick mantra that I always actually say is follow your heart,
yeah,
right? And there is nothing like a right solution, right choice and stuff.
Yeah.
Because as somebody said, most careers are actually decided when you're a teenage, right? So what do you know as a teenager to pick a career that is expected to last for about the next 40, 50 years? Doesn't make sense at all, right? So which means that the 40-year-old guy could also be saying, hey, why the hell did I actually, you know, get into this career, right? So that means that he is actually pretty much having the same problem as a 20-year-old. Okay, so that means that we are all in the same boat, right? Yeah. So put it another way, I'm going to actually be, I'm 56, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be 57 next year for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
As much as I don't know how old you are, you're going to be that plus 1 year,
the first time
in your life. So all of us actually are
leading for the first time.
Right, for the first time in our lives.
Yes.
Right, so all of us are just as young.
Yeah.
So no advice.
No advice. Perfect. I think rightfully said that we are all going to face something by ourselves, and each of our struggles and, you know, the process of running a establishment would be completely different. Yeah. What might be easy for you might be something difficult for me. And like you said, it's the first time. Thank you so much for chatting with us today. And I think your sense of humor has been really good. Thank you so much for taking us through your journey and through E-Plane. And surely very soon we'll see it on our streets.
We need the humor to sweat it out, literally.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Wind Talks from the campus of IIT Madras. See you soon in the next season.